Hi, my name is Danny, I'm an alcoholic. There's a lot of you, my God. Oh, fuck me. Okay, before I start, I would like to thank one special person, the only person that stepped up to be chairman for this event. Without him, there wouldn't have been a convention today. We would not be here. That one is Bill. Thank you, Bill. There's Bill. Right on time. There is no coincidence, is there? Welcome, Bill. Okay, so, as I said, I'm Danny, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm 18 years sober, by the grace of God, and this wonderful program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, I am, of course, a bit nervous, and I'll try to make it a good share. So my story starts 66 years ago. I was born 66 years ago, and I didn't grow up in a very happy family. I had a neurotic mother who was on pills. My father was a tormented man. They were both war kids. They both had their life experience, so I can't really blame them. But nevertheless, it wasn't a cheerful childhood that I had. It was cold, very strict. There was absolutely no place for feelings. No compassion. The sentence that ruled in the house was, life is a burden, it's a task, life is not a gift, you have to work hard. And I believed it. This is what I heard from ever since I was young. So since my mother was neurotic and she kept on repeating, like, we wish we never had you, or and I believed it. I believed that that I was an unwanted child, because at the age of 4, 5, 6, and I remember it very clearly. So I grew up in fear, and I grew up in guilt, because my mother blamed me for being as she was. You know, I was a difficult kid, and so on. In fact, I still am, but okay. So. By the age of 6, 7, there was, let's say, abuse of my physical integrity by my dad. That changed a lot in my relationship with my dad. My mother knew about it, on top of the shame and the guilt, on the guilt and the fear came shame, because I couldn't talk about it with anyone, it had a major effect on the rest of my life, and it caused a major resentment towards both of my parents. I grew up. I did not have many friends, but of course there were good times, and of course it was while it was okay. But by the age of 14, 15, another big thing came into my life: girls. And when the hormones kicked in, I was so scared. I was, due to the physical abuse and what happened to him and my dad, I was too scared, I went into isolation. I always sat in my room, I started questioning things. Why am I here? What's the purpose of this all? I cursed my parents for having put me on this earth, and I was a very dark young man, and I'm with very dark thoughts. So when I was 16, someone from a school suggested, why don't you come to the youth club with us? There's a new youth club and it's fun and it's blah blah. But at first I wasn't interested, but they convinced me, so and I went in. I went with him, and there the doors opened there, and I thought it was hell, because I saw things I never saw before. I was 16, and there were people drinking beer. There were girls sitting on the laps. They were smoking. They were drinking beer, and I thought, well, this is hell. I thought this is hell. So someone offered me a drink. And what happened then was indescribable. I instantly, within a few seconds, I felt completely, completely different. The fear, the guilt, the shame, they melted like snow for the sun. And I remember it very well, how I felt. And I remember thanking God for having found this potion, because it made me feel absolutely amazing. I was the happiest boy on the planet. And I thought, finally, it's over. Some of you know the AA speaker Clancy, you know, Clancy Imersvlund, and he once described it, and it's exactly what happened to me. Alcohol made me feel stronger and less scared, and the rest of the world smaller and less threatening. And that's exactly what it did to me, less threatening, because the world was threatening to me. And so I thought, I found a solution. And I was really, really happy, and I couldn't get enough of it. So I went home, drunk, went to bed, and then the room started spinning around, and I didn't know what happened, because I never lived this before, so I went sick. I spent the night with my head down in the toilet. And I swore to God that it would never, never, ever happen to me again. This awful feeling, I puked my guts out, I thought, well, this is nothing for me, this is it. But then the strange thing happened. And that is that after a few days, I forgot about the sickness, I forgot about the promises to my parents that I would not get drunk anymore. And the only thing I could remember was the feeling that it caused, the oblivion. So I went back, totally forgetting about the sickness. The same thing started again. You know, I felt on top of the world, came home, sick again, same shit. And actually, this continued on. Drank myself to the sickness. I drank that much that I made my body used to alcohol. So I became a heavy drinker from a very early age. At 17, I was a heavy drinker, and I loved it. And we had parties, and we had fun, and we did everything that God forbid. And it was absolutely amazing, because from this scared boy that could not cope with life at all, I grew into this big-mouthed man, you know. I am big, and I can look very dangerous, and so I used it. I started building my image, and alcohol helped me with it. I became very popular, and I became the beer king and things like that. You know, it was fantastic. It was absolutely amazing. But slowly but surely, things started happening. I got in trouble with police sometimes. I got into fights. These little things that we think like, well, it's normal if you get drunk. It's normal at the age of 18, 19. So, but there were signs that things were not okay. I met a girl, I got married, I got two kids. And instead of taking my responsibility as a dad, I kept on living the life that I lived before, you know. I kept on living like an 18-year-old boy, partying in the weekend. My wife had the kids. She was very happy with the kids. And I was very happy because I could continue my let's say, bachelor life. I stayed out later and later. I drank not only in the weekend, started drinking during the week, started getting on heavier stuff. Started to visiting bars because pubs were closed at 10, 11. So, and that was, I was still thirsty at that time. So, you know, I went to bars. On one drunken night, I was married 10 years. The inevitable happened. I met a woman, very pretty woman. I went home with her. And I cheated on my wife for the first time after 10 years of marriage. And I always swore I would never, ever, ever do that. But, you know, the alcohol takes away morals, so... And I discovered the second thing that I never experienced before. That was sex. I had the most passionate night in all my life. My sex life with my wife was very average. And this I never lived before, and so again I discovered something that I, just like alcohol, started chasing. It became an obsession like alcohol. I couldn't go on like this, so you know, cheating on my wife, so I left her with two kids. One was two, the other one was six, and I just, ice cold, I walked out of the house. Took my bags, took my shit, and I ran off. There were still a few things in my way to lead my life as I wanted, and that was, for instance, this was my boss. So I worked for a boss, and I thought, you know, having to come on time every day, you know, and telling me what to do, blah, 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 not earning enough, so I thought, you know what, I'm going to start my own business, and then I'll drive a big W like him, and then I'll have plenty of money to go to the bars and have even a better life. So, and that's what I did. I quit my job, started my own business, and I was free. And that's really when the downfall started. I worked hard in the beginning. I earned a lot of money, and the more money I earned, the more I spent in bars, on booze. I got in trouble with the tax man after a while. I got in trouble, couldn't pay my bills anymore, started getting debts. I got into drunken fights. I did not manage my business as I should have, so my business wasn't open. I started my week on Wednesday and I ended it on Thursday afternoon. So and the rest was drinking. And but I wasn't free to drink anymore. I had to drink, you know. And I started getting very shaky, very scared. I landed in hospital a few times with severe health problems. I rented an apartment, and I got kicked out after 8 months of not paying my rent. And then I met a girl who was willing to take me in, and we really tried to make a relationship. So, and I could stop drinking for 1 or 2 months, but then the old Danny came out. I missed my friends, I missed football, I missed blah blah. So I asked her, listen, I would like to go out just once, because she knew I was a heavy drinker. And she said, okay, why don't you go to football, come home. I said, okay, went to the match, came home 3 days later. And she kicked me out. And it was the only place that I had to sleep. So I landed in the street. I had nowhere to go to. And with the last money I had, I bought an inflatable mattress, a two-person one, of course, because you never know. You could, you know. And and a sleeping bag. And and there I was out on the street. I had nothing left. My business was broke. I had no money at all. I had to choose between eating and smoking. That was a choice that I had. So I squatted in a house that was for sale, an old house, and there I lived. I came in at 2-3 o'clock at night, and I thought I was out at 7 o'clock in the morning because I was scared that people would find me there. And I visited the doctor one day, and he said, "Listen, man, if you go on like this, I'll give you 3 months. It's over with you. You know, your liver and your pancreas and everything is completely fucked." And actually, I welcomed the idea because I thought, you know, that is better than the life that I lead. So, and I was longing for the end. The only thing that kept me from ending my life was the thought of my kids, because I had 2 kids. And somehow they were always in my head. And someday, I'm in these circumstances, I met a guy I used to drink with, and he was sober. And he told me, he said, "You know, man, you're gonna die." I said, "Oh, the sooner the better, I don't care." I said, "I remember saying, you know, if you had a shitty life like mine, you would drink too." And then he said, "Maybe, man, it's the opposite. Maybe it's because you drink that much that you got a shitty life." And I never thought about it that way. He gave me a telephone number, and he said, "If you don't want to come with me to an AA meeting," because he went to AA meetings, he said, "I'll give you a telephone number from a guy, call him." And I don't know why, because I never obeyed anyone. I never did what I had to do. I did not take suggestions, and my sponsor knows that it's still very difficult these days. So, and I was staring at the note, and I thought, "Shall I call him? Shall I call him?" And I did. I did call him. And I got a friendly voice on the other side of the telephone, and he said, "You know, man, if you think you've got a problem with alcohol, I'll help you. Come to a park." It was a little park in the neighborhood, and there was an AA room, but I didn't know that at the time. There was a little building in Stroombeek near to Brussels. And he said, "I'll be on a bench, and I'll have a blue book with me. Okay? So, and I'll see you there at 7 o'clock. And I hung up the phone, and I thought, "Fuck, how low can you go? I'm making appointments with elderly men now in the park, so But I went, and he was there. And that was strange to me, because someone who does what he promised he would do, that was something I did not know. So and we talked for a while, and then he took me in to the rooms, and that was the most scary thing I ever done. And I could only think of one thing. I said, "Fuck me, if I only had a drink now, this would be so much easier." I went into that room, there were all people sitting there, and someone said, will someone do his story here? There was a guy sitting in the back, and he raised his arm and said, "I will." And I looked at him, and even though I was dying, I decided I was going to hate him profoundly. I didn't like him at all, because he announced himself as an artist, and I hate artists. And he had a ponytail, and an earring, and I thought, "Oh my God, is he going to tell me what to do?" Um, They must have thought I was really mad then, because I remember that I went in there in combat clothes from the army, with combat boots and a big knife on my belt, because I thought someone might attack me in there. So I was really crazy, and there's people in here who saw me coming in. So anyway, that same guy started talking, and I didn't believe what I was hearing. He didn't talk about how much he drank, and he didn't talk no cowboy stories, anything, you know. He just started sharing about how he felt. And that was completely, completely new to me. I never talked about feelings. In the world where I live in, you don't talk about feelings. You know, drinkers and whores and bars and fighters and hooligans. And he could describe exactly how I felt. And I thought, how can this be? How can this man describe better? He could describe better how I felt than I could have done it myself. And that made a click in my head. I thought, there's something special here. And the only thing they said was, well, you know what, come back tomorrow. And how do you feel now about your first meeting before I went out? I said, well, you've got an amazing intelligence service here, because you know how I feel, you know who I am, you know what I do, you know what I've done. So I thought, who told you all this? Where's the files? And I swear to God I did. I asked them, where is the files here? And they only said, you know, man, you're one of us. And I thought, well, okay. And then another strange thing happened, because I went home and I did not go to the pub. There was some little hope that was planted inside me, because I knew I was going to die. Doctors told me I was going to die. I was convinced I was going to die. And I felt like I was on a big highway, you know, at 300 kilometers an hour, and I was going to hit a wall, and that was for certain. And these guys told me this little small exit that I never expected. And they led me to the exit, and I took it. And it saved my life. After the second meeting, I saw an old man sitting there with really friendly eyes. He was like a crossing between like Santa Claus and Father Christmas, with a gray beard and always smiling and gentle and sweet. And I asked him, will you help me? I didn't know what a sponsor was, because we didn't talk about sponsors in that group at the time. So, and he said, sure, call me every morning, 8:30. That's okay. And for 2 years in a row, every single day at 8:30, I called him. And he taught me how to get up. He taught me how to eat properly. He asked me, did you wash, did you shower? Because the house that I squatted in, my dad bought it for me, because he didn't want me to live on the street. So he helped me, and I had an empty house. You know, there was no chairs. There was my inflatable 2-person mattress, of course. So and slowly it got better, and my health got better, and it was great. I felt better. And it's amazing how alcoholics physically recover, because after a few months, you know, I felt on top of the world again. And it was nice, it was good, it was a good life. I made friends there. And then I met someone from a group in Brussels, Folders. And he said, why don't you come to our group? I said, okay, well, come and see. I think I was 1 year sober. And there I got a completely other outlook on the program, because I was in a group where there was, you know, people were just chatting about how was your week, and how was your week, and how's your wife, and how's your cat and your dog, and this and that. But they stayed sober, you know. I owe them respect, because they led me to sobriety. But in that group in Brussels, I found that there was a program, that there were steps, and someone asked me, do you have a sponsor? And I asked him, what's a sponsor? Because I had this guy that I called every day, but you know, I didn't call him sponsor. We didn't know what sponsors were. And I said, well, I could sure use one with my financial situation. So I said, well, can you get me one? And someone suggested. He said, you know what? Is there an asshole in your group you don't like? Oh, I said, sure, there's many. He said, well, take the worst. I said, yeah, but, you know, I can't do that because then my life is going to be over. And he said, well, that's exactly what you need, man. He said, and I went to that man and I asked him, will you sponsor me? And he said, no. And I thought, who the fuck do you think you are? I said, if you have the privilege to sponsor me, you should be grateful. So, and he said, there's no way I'm going to sponsor you, man. You're too wild. You haven't got a clue. Luckily, a few months later, in that Volders group, there was a big book study, and I attended to the big book study, and then I needed a sponsor. And so I went back to him and I said, will you please sponsor me? Because I am in this big book study and I need someone to guide me to do a third step with and blah, blah, and blah, blah. And then he said, okay, you know, now we're getting there. So, and he sponsored me for 10 years. He stayed my sponsor. He basically taught me how to shut up, because that was my problem. I could not listen. He taught me how to really listen to people, how to respect people. He taught me how to read what is written and not what I think is written. He taught me to read between the lines. He taught me how to listen to people, how they do not say what they say, because that was important. And so he taught me a lot. He stayed my sponsor for 10 years. I went through the steps. I did two big book studies. So, and I started seeing that this was not about drinking. It's absolutely not about drinking. Drinking was, as we know, the symptom. But there's so much that lies underneath, and I did not know that. Anyway, the years went by. I have to mention one person. I was 9 years sober, and life was good. I had a girlfriend, Carol. My ex-wife remarried. They had a good life. I had a good life, and everything was good. I was sober. There was respect. I rebuilt the relationship with my kids, who didn't want to see me anymore, of course, when I was drinking, and everything was nice. It was good. Life was good, and she called me, and she said, Danny, I need to talk to you. She said, I'm dying. And she was 52, and I thought, fuck, why? God, why? You know, it's so good, life is so good now, why? I had the privilege to spend a lot of time with her before she died. She gave me two wonderful kids, and when she died, I was 9 years sober, and my daughter came to me and she said, you know what, Dad? It should have been you. And I said, I know, but I can't help what nature decides, and I'll try to do my best. And that was a major thing for me, because the woman that I hurt so much, I left her with two little kids, never paid any alimony, no, I just walked out, fucked off, you know. And luckily I did a night step with her before she was sick. Luckily, because and I honor her until this day, because she gave me the most precious things that I owe today, beside my sobriety, it's my kids. So Okay, I came to the convention. I met Carol on a convention here. And I also attended a meeting, and it was a meeting about sex. And that was one of the things that I thought, oh, fuck, you know. And there was this guy, and he was sharing about this issue. And he used words, and he had an outlook on this thing. I thought, how can you talk like that? It was amazing, and I thought, one day, I'm going to ask him to help me out with this problem. And I did. I visited him, and we had a chat. And it took us a few weeks, and then he said, well, you know what, I'll be your sponsor. And I left my old sponsor, who worked with me 10 years ago. It was not easy, because you build up a relationship of trust, and it didn't end very, very nicely, but that was not my problem. And the first thing I started wondering when I started working with my current sponsor was, how do these promises come true in my life? Do I really have a new freedom today? And the answer was no. No. I was still scared. My relationship with my kids was not very clear. Do I fear financial, economical insecurity, and do I know how to deal with to handle things that used to baffle us? And I know it in Flemish, I know it very well. And the answer to most of these questions, if I'm really, really honest to myself, because that man told me, to thine own self be true. And if I was true to myself, I had to say no. I was still tied to the past. I was still tied in many, many, many ways. I did not have that new freedom at all. So we started working on it. I set all my relationships straight with my kids, with my partner. We went through rough times. People warned me, if you're going to work with that guy, you're going to lose everything. He's going to take your relationship away. He's going to take everything away, you know. And he did. He took a lot away. He took away my illusions. I lost a lot of illusions, and I started to see very clearly what was really going on. I started to get more real, like the big book says. You know, I started to see things as they are, and it hurt again. It hurt again. But at least, you know, I knew I could distinguish the truth from the false. And slowly, my relationship with my partner, it got better. It got better. I had to put my boundaries. That was all. I learned to not accept the unacceptable. Because that's what I do. And I accept the unacceptable, and then I start complaining. You see? So, and it was all things he learned me. He taught me. He taught me about the power of the subconscious, and I'm not going to go too deep into this, but you know, the way I was programmed, it explains, why do I not trust authority? Why did I become a rebel without a cause? Because I don't trust authority. Where did I learn authority? With my dad. I don't trust authority. I never did. I got in trouble with police, I got in trouble in the army, I got in trouble in school. Why do I not trust women? Because women know, and they will look away when you're in trouble. I ended many relationships. Well, I didn't have that many, but I ended a few relationships because those girls told me, hey, Danny, I love you. And my answer was, I have no money. I rejected it completely, and I dropped them. I did not want to be loved. I did not trust anyone. So, but okay, how am I today? Today, I'm a very happy man. Although, not so long ago, I experienced that nothing is acquired forever. Because few things happened, at the end of last year, I had a fallout with my daughter. She was angry with me for stupid reasons, because I stuck to my principles. That's why. And I couldn't see my grandchild anymore. She didn't talk to me anymore, and it was horrible. And I was in a lot of pain. And we booked a holiday together a few weeks later. So she came on holiday with me, but it was really cold, and she didn't talk to me on that holiday. Same holiday, my dog got attacked. The dog, I love my dog dearly. My dog got attacked by another dog. And things happened. And I thought, fuck, is this life? And I didn't pray anymore. I did not ask God for guidance in the morning, because I was too busy with my own problems. I was busy chasing the guy, the owner of the dog. I was trying to get the love of my daughter back. I was trying to influence my grandchild to get some of her attention. And it was always me, you know. And I forgot, please God, help me. I forgot all the questions that I used to ask myself when I was in that good place, because I have been in a good place. I have lived in serenity, and I have lived in what they call the spiritual awakening. And I was proud of it. I was proud of it, you know, because I felt really good. And all of a sudden, everything tumbled down. Everything tumbled down. And I started questioning my sponsor. And I started cursing the sponsees, because I have a few sponsees. And it was their fault, and it was my partner's fault, and everything fell apart. And I thought, fuck you all, you know, this is not working anymore. And then a dear friend of mine, thank you Danny, I don't know where you are, sent me a few lines out of the 11th step. And it says, luckily, even the best of us fail. And the only thing you can do when you fail is to get on your knees and to pray, even if you don't want to pray, and if you think you can't pray anymore, and even if you become rebellious, just pray, try. And I did. And it's amazing how fast it goes, that you get your connection back with God. I was deeply ashamed, but I kept on sharing about it in meetings. And today I'm back on track. It's okay. I've got a good life. I've got a good relationship. It's okay with my family. I feel safe. I feel protected. I feel guided. And the major thing is that today I refuse to be a victim. Because that I was all my life. All my life I was a victim. I love that role. Today I refuse to be a victim. I will take my responsibility always. And in any case, I will take my responsibility. Because that is what God wants for me. I think I'm going to end it here. I'm so grateful for you all being here. Thank you for letting me share my story. And I wish you a good convention.